Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of super yachting is Holly Overton. Hi Holly.
Hello, I'm back.
You are back. Welcome back to the Boat Briefing podcast. You're back in rotation.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
You are very welcome. So we will touch on Monaco because obviously last week Katya and Caroline had a look back at the show, but I think it's a good opportunity for us to review some of our highlights from the biggest event on the super yachting calendar as well, Hol. But first, I just wanted to mention that this week, the November issue of Boat International hits the newsstands, and it is our traditional November refit issue. And there's a very special boat gracing the cover. It is 105 meter H by Ocean Co, used to be known as Indian Empress. Truly extraordinary boat. Have you had a chance to look at some of the picture?
I have. They've turned what was kind of an old traditional boat into this modern kind of beast.
Yeah, it is a pretty remarkable transformation. So Ocean Co don't even like calling it a refit or a rebuild even. They class it as a new build. So comprehensive was the transformation. They've added length, they've completely redone the interior, added some amazing features like this incredible video wall that you, or video corridor that you kind of walk through. Yeah, it's very special. Much more efficient as well. Running costs are down, speeds reduced, but efficiencies increased. Yeah, it's a pretty remarkable project. And it came in late. So this boat kind of, we got the story very, very late in the day in the production of the issue. And I mention it in the editor's letter of the issue, because sometimes you get the sniff of a scoop. And as any good journalist will know, you kind of tear up any plans to get the big story. And when this one, we finally got the green light to get this into the issue, we kind of tore the issue apart and rebuilt it around H, because it's such a good story. Yeah, so extremely stressful, the issue of the magazine to put together, but worth it, I hope, to bring you this extraordinary tale. There's lots more in the issue besides, of course. There is a jewellery special, so anyone looking to buy that special someone in your life, something insanely expensive and glittering, don't miss this issue. Bell, our luxury editor, has put together a really brilliant wrap-up of some of the finest jewellery on the market. Meanwhile, Tony Parker, if you're a basketball fan, that name will be very familiar to you. He used to be a huge star in the NBA, so he has grew up in France, actually, and grew up around the sea, and has now bought, upon retirement, an Explorer yacht from AVA in Turkey, and he'll be cruising the globe, really. He'll do everything in the boat, very capable boat, obviously huge ceiling heights to account for his vast height. And there's a brilliant piece also about refitting your yacht with super sustainable interiors. And this is all about bio design. So there's some of these new materials coming onto the market, mosses, for instance, and leathers you can make from all sorts of natural materials, and how you can basically, you know, the cover line is grow your own saloon, and it's not far off that. So you can, some of the studios at the avant-garde of this, Winch Design, for instance, and there are various others, can replace all those fine materials that are associated with animals with plant materials. And it's quite extraordinary what you can now do. With mushrooms even, for instance, it's remarkable. So don't miss that if you are refitting or even building a new boat and you want the latest in bio design on your boat. And that's the subject we'll also be tackling at the Super Yacht Design Festival in January in Kitzbühel next year. If you haven't bought your tickets for that, do now. There's some brilliant, brilliant speakers involved in that event. But first, Holly, Monaco Yacht Show. Which one, how many Monacos have you done now?
I think that would be fourth, because obviously COVID ruined 2020 for us all. But yeah, fourth Monaco Yacht Show, probably my favourite so far. I think we brought out, I'm not sure what you'd think, but the biggest team that Boat Internationals had out there, which means that we actually got to have some breaks for some water and some food. I'm not sure if you had the same experience.
Well, it's always just a blur, isn't it? You're just constantly running around. And yeah, if you always feel guilty for sitting still for more than 5 minutes because there's always something to be done. But I always quite like hanging out at the stand because there's so much passing traffic and there's interesting people popping in constantly for conversations. So it's a great place to spend a bit of time. We had some great happy hours, didn't we? We had a brilliant Owners Club event on Nero, Captain's Club event down at Crazy Pizza. We worked with Frette on a cocktail at the Hotel de Paris. And of course, the big Boat International party on the Friday night. But I mean, if you could pick a few highlights, what would they be?
I know that we spoke about, or Katia and Caroline last week spoke about This Is It, but I was passing and I sort of jumped on board because when you look at it from the stern, it's just incredible. This kind of asymmetric masterpiece. And from the side, of course, it's radical. It looks like nothing you've ever seen before. So that was probably one of the highlights for me. You went on board as well?
I did. I had a good look around with some of our World Superyacht Awards judges because This Is It will be in the competition next year. So this is the 43-meter catamaran from the Italian Sea Group built in Carrara, Italy. How would you even begin to describe that boat? I tried.
It has to be seen to be believed. When it was coming into the marina, sort of a late arrival to the show, it certainly turned heads, that's for sure.
Yeah, it really did. So, I mean, it's kind of like a houseboat, isn't it? It's like a super yacht houseboat. Because the volumes inside are, you know, residential, aren't they, for a boat of that length. And the head heights are huge. The saloons are vast. The asymmetrical
nature. We'll go with that.
Yeah, it's really interesting design solutions. And you kind of walk through it and you think this is straight out of some kind of one of our 10 crazy concept stories. And you think this will never get built. But of course, it was there. Just remarkable.
I think the word is asymmetry. It's surprising we've made it this far in our journalistic careers.
I just might have ended mine by not knowing that word. So there you go. Yeah, so seeing that boat in the flesh after only seeing renderings in the past was something else. And then, of course, next to it was, I know this was mentioned last week as well, but Art Explorer. And I think Caroline also, well, she did, she mentioned, so the owner, Frédéric Jousset, is a French businessman. And he's got this great ambition for this boat, basically, to sail around the world, putting on exhibitions in communities all over the place, really. Cultural exhibitions, bringing art, music, theatre, whatever it might be, to communities that don't have ready access to those things. And I called him up and I said, where are you? Because it'd be great to come and look at the boat. And so he said, I'll be there in kind of 20 minutes. So we hung around and then he turned up and we got on the boat and he said, oh, this is my first time on the boat. And I felt, what? And I just suddenly felt incredibly guilty that we were somehow invading this incredibly personal moment. So his first time stepping on the almost finished boat. But it was a brilliant moment to share with him. And he was clearly emotional as he wandered the decks and kind of took in this incredible boat that he'd spent so many years realizing. And I should mention Axel de Beaufort as well, the designer who helped him bring his vision to life. And he's done a brilliant job because it's a great looking machine.
So it's not cruising until next year. Is that when it begins its journey?
Yes, I believe so. So both Art Explorer and This Is It were rushed to the show by the shipyard. So they were at pains to point out they weren't the finished article. And so they'll go back to the shipyard, or have gone back to the shipyard now, just to be have those finishing touches added. So they'll still be delivered this year to their owners. And so eligible for the World Superyacht Awards next year. But I've seen some photos as well, done post Monaco of Art Explorer particularly, and just some of the shapes of the superstructure brought out brilliantly the images, and they just look fantastic. I think it's just a great looking boat, and it was a real thrill to watch them coming into the port on the night before the show. Some other brilliant boats at the show, obviously, still. Nero, it was great to see Nero, because I'd never been on board the boat before. So it was brilliant to wander through her. Corinthia 7, of course, 97-meter Lursen, fresh from her refit. Looking very, very good indeed. And it felt very positive, the show, I thought. Everyone was in very good spirits, continuing on from Cannes and Genoa. And some brilliant boats, and from what I understand, good business was being done. So and it was great to see so many people.
So one of my slightly unconventional highlights was on a brokerage boat. It's listed with Camper Nicholson's. It's called Sea Huntress. I think it's a 80s or maybe 90s fed ship, and in the middle of the main saloon there's this footstool. It's quite large. And it's probably one of the most impractical objects I've ever seen on a superyacht, but I loved it. It was a, it was kind of white and topped with these stuffed baby seals, not real seals, these kind of plush toys with these big eyes. And there must have been sort of 25, 30 all kind of stuck to this this highly impractical footstool. And I've thought about maybe trying to recreate it with a staple gun and some plush baby seals.
Well, if you manage it, can you bring some photos into the office, please?
Well, I'm making you one for Christmas. Secret Santa this year.
It's what I've always wanted, so that's perfect. Thank you very much. But now I'll know who my Secret Santa is when I get a big impractical footstool with lots of stapled baby seals on it. That sounds really bad, doesn't it? So that was Monaco. I thought it was great. Loved it as ever. And now it's this kind of, I would say lull, but it's not a lull because work's gone absolutely crazy. But there's this period now between Monaco and Fort Lauderdale, which I can't quite believe I'm flying out to next week, the end of next week. It seems wild, doesn't it?
Yeah, because you wrap up all your Monaco conversations at the same time as you're planning all your sort of route around flibs. It's a crazy little period between the two shows. But will we all be flying out 2 weeks today?
Oh, I'm going a bit earlier because we've got to do we're doing an event in Miami just before the show, so I'll be out there a bit longer. But I love being out in Florida, South Florida. It's a fascinating place. But we won't do a full flibs preview. I think we'll leave that to next week's podcast. And we'll look at some of the boats, the new builds and the brokerage boats on display at the show, and try and generate a bit of excitement for the US's biggest superyacht show. Just after Monaco. So Monaco rolled into Saint-Tropez for me because we went down to Sea Levoile de Saint-Tropez just after Monaco, because each year we very kindly donated the superyacht Talita. We run an event on Talita, Tara Getty's boat, every year in Saint-Tropez. And this year it was just spectacular because the weather was perfect. Unhelpfully for the sailing yachts, it wasn't very windy, but it was very helpful to us because sometimes there's a bit of chop in the bay. So getting people off the tender onto Talita can always be a bit challenging. But this year it was super still, and it was just the most gorgeous evening because the light in Saint-Tropez is wild. If you've been there in late summer, the sun goes down, the sky lights up, the most brilliant auburn colours and you're on Toledo drinking a glass of something cold and fizzy. And it's really a happy place for me. Whenever work's getting me down, I think about that moment and think things aren't so bad after all. We are very lucky to have some brilliant sponsors, and I should mention one. So Glenrothers, single malt fans will know the name Glenrothers. It's one of the finest distilleries in Scotland in Speyside. They're part of the Edrington Group, of which the Macallan is also a part. So they chose our event in Saint-Tropez to launch this extraordinary creation called Philos, which is this, how to describe it? It's a single malt dispensing device built by Little Halstock, which are brilliant craftspeople. So this piece, I better start at the beginning of this story because it's quite complicated. So basically, Glenrothers found in their distillery this incredibly textured, delicate, beautiful single malt whiskey from 1969 in a series of demijohns, and there are only 6 or 9 or so of these demijohns in existence. So there's a finite amount of this single malt, and they thought, well, how do we celebrate this incredible liquid? So they contacted the design studio, Studio Indigo, and said, well, will you work with us to design this kind of dispensing device for this very limited edition 1969 single malt? And Studio Indigo, of course, said, that's a great challenge. We'd love to have a go. So they designed it, and Little Halstock built it. It costs, with the demijohn of whiskey, it costs £1.5 million. It's quite large, but it's beautiful. And it's a gimbal. So it's designed specifically to sit on a yacht and hold this whiskey from 1969, and the articulation of it is all very elegant and exquisite, and you kind of pull levers and things and twist dials, and the whiskey turns over, and this kind of thing comes up from the bottom of this device, and it dispenses the perfect measure of whiskey, which then drops down through this kind of system, which runs through the base of this construction called Philos and pours out. Wow. That's supposed to resemble the hills of Speyside, and eventually pours out into this glass, and then you drink your single malt. I'm not doing it the remotest justice, but trust me when I say it is extraordinary. And we've actually written a piece about Philos that we'll include in the description. I urge you to take a look, because it's one of the most extraordinary things I've ever seen. More extraordinary was the effort to get it on board the boat from the tender. So it was embarked onto the tender, and then the tender pulled alongside, and the entire tender containing Philos had to be winched onto the boat, and then it was got off the tender, which was quite the exercise. And Harry Warburton, who we work with on the sales side, sent some photos. He went to help out the effort, and it was quite sweaty work getting this thing onto the boat. But I'm so glad they did, because it's just wild.
I've always really struggled with whiskey, but I've clearly been drinking it wrong this whole time.
Yeah, you just need to spend £1.5 million on this thing, Hull. It's amazing. But what makes it... So it's going on a world tour now. So hopefully it'll be shown off in lots of fancy places. So hopefully you'll get a chance to see it. But what's so special, quite apart from the creation of this amazing dispensing device itself, is the fact that, you know, once this whiskey's gone, it's gone. It'll never be done again. There's only 6 or 9, one of the 2 demijohns. So if you do love your single malts and you're in the market for an extraordinarily well-designed and crafted piece of furniture, basically, to dispense the perfect measure of this limited single malt, well, Philos might just be your answer. But quite apart from the event, I love being in Laval. I love being in Saint-Tropez during that time, because it's still so warm. The whole town is buzzing with all the sailing going on. Restaurants are full. some fun late nights. Yeah, it's a brilliant time. You're a sailor, Holly. You need to get down to Livewell.
I know. I was just thinking. It's probably on my list. Maybe next year. Maybe next year.
Next year. And if you do get to, if you do get the chance to go, there's a very funny hotel called L'Hermitage up the hill a bit from Saint-Tropez town that is the most, one of the strangest hotels I've ever stayed in. It's there's this kind of bizarre kind of corridor, like nightclub bar that there's a live band in most of the time, but can only hold about 20 people. But the band is playing like they're playing at Wembley or something. It's amazing. But if you expect any early nights at this hotel, it's not the one for you because it's quite a late night place.
Well, Stu, while you were living up in Saint-Tropez, some of us were doing some real work on the news desk. And you can't have failed to notice that there were a couple of fires that we should probably mention. Firstly, you might have seen some devastating images circulating on social media of the Antigua Yacht Club Marina building going up in flames, and it's been completely gutted. There was a video that I was sent of it kind of smoking. And for those, I'm sure a lot of you will know the building, it's kind of the heart of that waterfront with Cloggies, which is a restaurant and bar. It's a great cruise spot. Down below is a provisioning space where I used to sail out there. I sailed out there last year, for Antigua Sailing Week. And that's where we got our sandwiches each morning. So the cause of the blaze isn't yet known. There has been rumours that it was struck by lightning because they were suffering quite a serious tropical storm at the time. Prime Minister Gaston Brown commented on the situation online, and he said, giving thanks that no one got seriously hurt. We have been spared the worst. As a resilient people, we soldier on while assisting the business and property owners to rebuild. And he also noted that destruction would result in at least 100 job losses. So it's quite... it's a devastating fire. A statement by the Yacht Club said, Antigua Yacht Club Marina is deeply devastated by the fires that occurred, particularly affecting the facilities and services within our main complex. Our thoughts are with the affected business owners and their employees during this difficult time. It went on, despite this unfortunate incident, we want to assure our valued members, patrons, and the sailing community that the main marina facilities, including diesel, water, electricity, and dockage, remain fully operational. So yeah, that was the statement.
Yeah, the building is gone. I mean, the building obviously is still standing, but it's utterly gutted. I mean, there's nothing remaining of its interior. So yeah. Not a great one to witness. And nor, in fact, was the other day we saw some nasty pictures of the 47-metre motor yacht Navis 1 catching fire and sinking in Greece. So Navis 1, built in 2014 by Gentec, she caught fire on the evening of the 9th of October. Thank God no injuries have been reported. But eyewitness accounts said there was lots of large debris in the water surrounding the blaze. One eyewitness told us that the yacht arrived in the local area about 4 p.m. and the blaze began shortly after at around 8 p.m. And then, of course, it went to the bottom. So we don't know the cause of that one yet. But, of course, we will be following the story as it develops. Yeah, never great to see these fires. It seemed to me about 18 months ago we went through a kind of a spate of fire stories, but then it went quiet for a while, didn't it? Now there's two in the course of a few weeks. So our thoughts, obviously, with the Antigua yachting community. I hope the yacht club gets rebuilt bigger and better. And obviously, seeing a big motor yacht like Navis 1 go to the bottom, never good. Never, never good. All right, should we move on to our brokerage picks this week, Holly? And as a sailor, you've gone for something with a big old mast.
I have. Sometimes I feel like the sailing yacht fleet doesn't get enough love. So this week, my brokerage pick is the 32.6-metre Vitters sailing yacht Rebel. I was actually in Antibes last week, taking a little sort of post-Monaco break, and naturally, the one thing I wanted to do after spending a week walking around a marina was to spend my holiday walking around a different marina. But I spotted Rebelle, and you can pick her out because she has this gorgeous sort of bit of teak that cascades over the transom from the deck, and it's beautiful. And the design feature was the work of Malcolm McKeon, who designed the boat, and Rebelle was delivered in 2017. She has a self-tacking jib, so she can be sailed with a small crew in cruising mode, or she transforms into this racing machine when you swap out her sails to high-tech performance sails, which includes an enormous 1,000 square meter bright red spinnaker. So you can always see her leading the pack around the marks. She's a regatta regular, having raced probably every super yacht event on the Mediterranean circuit. And my favorite feature, other than her transom, is the deck house, which from the outside is unremarkable. It's glass, low profile, but from the inside, it's this incredible glass canopy with these carbon fiber frames that houses the main saloon and sort of acts as a winter garden. So if you're in the market for a racer cruiser, Rebelle is asking €16,500,000 with Burgess. Stu, have you been on board?
Yeah, a few times. I've raced on her actually in Portocervo because she was built by one of our World Superyacht Awards judges, a woman many people know, Paola Trofiro. And Paola is a force to be reckoned with, extraordinary woman of great experience. And so when she built this boat with her husband, Salvatore, they poured just decades of deep, deep learning and experience into it. And Paola's obsessed with her galleys. So this is one of the best sailing yacht galleys you will see on the water for a boat of this length. She's so proud of that galley on that boat. Chefs will be very happy indeed. It's all there. But yeah, the saloon is remarkable. It's kind of, you look up and there's this massive glass canopy above you. I actually got in a lot of trouble on that boat one time because she was fairly newly delivered. And I was racing in Portocervo, running from side to side as we tacked. And I was sliding across the top of this glass canopy. And I was wearing so much sun cream that I just left these greasy sun cream streaks across the top of the glass canopy. And the crew started shouting at me because obviously it didn't look good. And
you've created a slip and slide on top of the boat.
I created a sun cream slip and slide. But anyone who's seen my complexion will appreciate that if I don't go out in the Portocervo sun wearing factor 50, I'll be burnt to a crisp. So belated apologies, obviously, to the crew that had to clean up my greasy sunscreen streaks across the top of Rebelle's deckhouse. But beautiful boat. That kind of teak falling over the transom as well. Yeah, that's really gorgeous. And Missy as well, the sister ship to Rebelle, had the same feature. And a few others have been delivered since. It's really nice. Yeah, really, really lovely design. So I've gone power this week, and my heart, I was really torn actually. My heart wanted to pick Santa Maria, this gorgeous 33-meter Fed ship from 1963. She's just been listed, literally just listed with Edmiston, and is the quintessential classic Fed ship with this beautiful, elegant blue hull. She's asking €5.95 million, which sounds to me like really good business for a yacht of this pedigree. And she's been very well maintained too and looks just gorgeous on the inside. I'm completely in love with her. And I wanted to pick her. Well, I sort of have half picked her. But my head, that was my heart. My head went with a boat called Kupani. And I've chosen her because it gives me a good opportunity to plug our Explorer Yacht Summit, which is coming up in Monaco on the 9th of November. Tickets on sale now. And she is a super tough, super capable 63.7 meter Explorer expedition yacht. Let's give it a true name. Built by Royal Denship in 2006. So I looked at her track this season using Boat Pro, and she's been all over the Med, crisscrossing from Istanbul to Parma. But she's capable of going so much further. And the reason she's in the news is because she's just had a $2 million price drop with Superyacht Sales and Charter. And I would buy her because there's a new vogue amongst explore yacht owners to conduct scientific research when they're out cruising the world's oceans. And Kupani is very capable of doing that and helping out the effort to understand the world's oceans a bit better. She's equipped with a scientific climatology lab and research facilities to investigate the consequences of global warming in the world's oceans. The massive 1,500 gross ton interior benefits from a variety of work areas. So she's got a wet lab, a lecture room, and a huge lazarette with a wet work area. Drop-down swim platform for embarking species, large dive locker with compressor, and loads and loads of storage. So her interior is quite classic at the moment. The wood looks beautiful. So if she was mine, I'd have to get a slightly more contemporary interior into her. But what she's got looks very nice indeed. She was last refitted in 2020, so everything should be very spick and span. And she was built by an owner and captain with vast experience of exploring the world, including various passages through the Northwest Passage. So she's got all the capability you would ever need and an ice-strengthened hull. She's currently asking $31.95 million, and that's with Superyacht Sales and Charter. So my heart, Santa Maria, my head, Kupani. Amazing boat, huge boat, and an absolute go-anywhere boat. So the Explore Yacht Summit, let me plug it again. It's happening in Monaco in just a few weeks on the 9th of November. It'll be a brilliant day. We've got some great speakers. We've got Mike Horn, the famous South African explorer. He's giving the keynote. We've got Richard Weiss from the Explorers Club in New York. We've got a panel of owners of smaller pocket explorers coming to talk about why they chose to build those boats. Loads more. The program's available on the website now, and you can buy tickets there as well. Please do come along. It's a brilliant day. We have a few drinks afterwards. We've got a kind of a live interactive design element this year as well, so it should be lots of fun. Yeah, check it out at boatinternational.com. On with the news.
So FedShip surprised us on Sunday with the launch of its 103-meter project 1011. It's the first time the boat has been seen in daylight and marks the 10th collaboration between the shipyard and Dutch studio Sino. The owner is a repeat client of the shipyard and previously owned a yacht of 6,000 gross tons. He wanted to keep the same design elements, but essentially condense it into a package around half the size. So the project uses 1,100 square meters of exterior glass with 20 exterior sliding doors, 12 glass windbreaks, and 6 meter panels of glass along the main deck for the guest cabins. There's also a 15 meter long tender garage and the largest shell door that FedShip has ever built to get that tender in and out. It's also got 4 hot tubs, a helicopter hangar, and a swimming pool. The project is the 4th largest FedShip to be built to date, following the 118 meter FedShip 821 and FedShip 1010, both of which are in build at the shipyard. And then, of course, there's the 110 meter Anna, which is out sailing about. So this project, 1011, will be heading out on sea trials later this year.
Amazing looking boat, 1011. Loads of deck space, as I noticed. If you look at her from above, just vast amounts of deck on show. But yeah, very, very cool looking thing indeed. Massive tender garage. Yeah, that's wild. Some serious engineering in that shell door. Congratulations to FedShip and the owner. Can't wait to see her delivered and cruising the world's oceans. So next up, we thought we'd just whip through some headlines hanging over from the Monaco Yacht Show you might not have seen, because there was so much news that you might not have caught it. And despite Monaco already seeming like a distant memory, I thought it'd be useful. just to highlight some of those stories that we thought were great. Let's start with Heeson. Heeson revealed a new 50-meter model called Project Grace, which was presented to the world with its designer Peter Eidsgaard of British studio Harrison Eidsgaard live sketching the yacht's profile at the show. And we believe this is the first model from the shipyard that adopts that open-tiered beach club with a glass-fronted infinity pool.
Over at Tankoa, the Italian shipyard announced that they had signed a contract for the build of a new 56-meter T560 Apache designed by Alberto Mancini. It's a smaller version of a 76-meter model that they revealed at the Monaco Yacht Show 2 years prior and has been commissioned by a young American couple as their very first entry into the yachting world. It has four and a half decks, with the half deck being a smaller observation deck just at the foot of the mast. And it's got a stepped aft deck, again, where you can see that open-air beach club with a glass pool at the centre and then fold-down bulwarks that extend that usable space by the water.
Staying in Italy, the Italian Sea Group announced four new projects during this year's show across its Admiral and Technomar brands. The largest is an 80-metre concept called Seaflower, which sees Luca Dini and newcomer Studio Fuxus join forces to create a futuristic profile with glass-encased balconies that extend from the yacht's hull. Also underway at Admiral is a 50-meter explorer yacht named Project Adventure, very appropriately, which is set to offer a very different look and feel to the brand's current flagship explorer Planet 9. Over on the Technomar side, the shipyard hinted at a new 40-meter multi-hull project that will draw similarities to This Is It and a 47-meter project T-Evo 155, which has been kept largely under wraps.
And finally, Mazza Yachts revealed a 40-meter flagship due to begin construction early next year. Sunseeker added a new Sunseeker 120 model to its superyacht line, and Ferretti Group introduced a new custom line Navetta 38 to replace the outgoing 37 model, as well as hinting at a new Pershing 170 model that we'll find out more about later this year.
So those are just some very, very quick highlights from the plethora of news stories we got from the Monaco Yacht Show. They're all, of course, on the website. We'll include links. And there's a kind of a wrap-up kind of news stories you might have missed story that we'll include a link to that as well. So don't miss any of those. Excited about Mazu. I think I love that shipyard. And Hallett, who runs it, is just the greatest guy. So I think really, really big things in store for Mazu Yachts. Very exciting future indeed. Very different kind of designs. Now, their smaller boats are very capable and very cool, but it's great to see them getting ever bigger. But from the modern to the classic, our data story this year concerns classic sailing yachts in honour of Le Voile de Saint-Tropez, which has just taken place. And as ever, the data story is brought to you by Boat Pro, the Superyacht Industry's leading market intelligence service. So we class a classic sailing yacht as anything over 24 meters LOA delivered before 1975. And guess how many there are on the water, Holly?
Trying desperately not to look at the script to try and come up with an original answer. But I'll tell you, there are a total of 318 in the world, which is around 25% of all the classic yachts sail or power on the water.
That's right. So 318 classic sailing yachts in the world. Their average LOA is 32 meters and their average age is an amazing 86.8 years. The flagship of this classic sailing fleet is, of course, 65-meter Creole, built by Camper Nicholson's in 1927. She's 96 years old, a real grand dame, and she's stunning. She was anchored off the Monaco Yacht Show, actually, this year, and I ran into her owner, Allegra Gucci, literally almost ran into her at the yacht club one morning. So she's the largest wooden sailing yacht in the world. She was launched as Vera in 27, as mentioned, for US carpet manufacturer Alexander Smith Cochrane, who didn't like the spars. He thought they were too small, so he cut them down and added a ton of ballast to compensate for the stumpy masts, but which didn't do much for its performance. So her next owner was British yachtsman Maurice Pope, who renamed her Creole after a dessert invented by his chef. And then she was bought by an English baronet who fixed her masts. But the timing was badly because she was then requisitioned for wartime service as a mine hunter. She was eventually bought after the war by Greek shipping magnate Stavros Niarchos, who chucked money at the project. And then he sold her in 1977 to the Danish Navy, who stripped her out completely for use as a training vessel. So she's had a few lives, this boat. In 1983, she was spotted and bought by Maurizio Gucci of the famous Gucci family. And she was badly in need of some tender, loving care. And Allegra said she was like a wreck, really, when the Gucci family bought her. The goal of my father was to give Creole a second life, to keep the boat as original as possible. There were no interiors, so those were the only things made new, and they were made to respect the soul of the boat in harmony with its history. The Gucci family have kept her in excellent condition ever since. And actually, we interviewed Allegra for the magazine a few years ago, and I wanted to pick out a few more quotes from that feature, which was written brilliantly by Caroline White, our deputy editor. So Allegra told Caroline, "Some of the best memories I have on Creole are the water fights that would suddenly break out on board. They would start as just a splash between me and my sister, and by the end of it, everyone would be soaking wet, owners, crew, and officers. Quite often, somebody ended up in the sea. It was great fun." Another great memory is crossing the Med from Spain to France or to Greece. "I remember the beauty of the dark sky, the silence of being in the middle of the sea in perfect conditions, and enjoying the quiet and the magic of the night." A brilliant feature with some great quotes and some brilliant pictures by Guillaume Plisson of this classic wooden sailing boat. So happy 96th birthday to Creole. I wonder what they'll do for the centenary. We'll put a link to the feature Caroline wrote in the description as well, so you can have a read of that for yourself. It's a good one. All right, Hol.
I think that's it.
I think that's it. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, thank you.
Have you had
again.
A good time?
Yeah, it gets easier each time.
You're natural, don't worry. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this week's Boat Briefing, which is mixed and produced, as ever, by the wonderful Adam Geist and Naomi Wilson. It has been a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week for some Flibs preview action. Take care.